And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Athletic Fantasy Baseball Podcast for Friday, September 9th. Derek Van Hyper here with Al Melchior. If you're one of our regulars who joins us on the live stream, my apologies for not having a live stream this week. We had an unexpected vet trip, which fortunately has turned out just fine, but that wreaked some havoc on my Friday schedule. So here we are recording this pod about an hour later than we typically go live. Lots of interesting players yet again this weekend, and a little bit of everything in terms of position options, a few guys that might offer speed if the playing time holds. Pitching maybe a little thinner by comparison, but even with that, we had a few more prospects come up in the past week, and those players are widely available. So we begin with bats, we begin with another prospect, and one who will debut by the time many of you get to hear this podcast. That is Josh Jung, getting the chance in Texas. We've been wondering for a few weeks if he would get this call. Injuries have kept him from debuting prior to this point. I think if he were completely healthy, Al, Jung may have seen the big leagues at some point early on in 2021. The numbers in the minor leagues have been really good overall. I think a recent slide at AAA actually kind of pulled this year's numbers down, but in the brief time that he was at Round Rock last season, Jung had a 348, 436, 652 line with 9 homers in 35 games and good plate discipline behind it. And seeing some of the comments he's made recently, it almost sounded like he was pressing a little bit in recent weeks at that same level, trying to do everything he could to get that promotion. So we'll see if he's able to adjust quickly and eliminate some of those bad habits. But I imagine the Rangers have every intent of just playing him on a daily basis for the rest of the season. And he could pretty quickly emerge to be one of their best threats in the middle of their order.
Yeah, he could just get right off the bat. And you did mention that recent slide to AAA. I don't want to put too much weight on the AAA numbers because, like you said, missed the bulk of the season. So there were maybe some adjustments, although it wouldn't have really appeared from the stats that he put up almost right away there. But the overall, the strikeout rate was up. The walk rate was way down. So maybe there's a little bit of concern there in terms of the batting average for Jung. But something I noticed DVR in looking at his profile, I've always been so focused on the power that Jung has, but he's been very consistently a line drive hitter. So I think that that kind of helps to assuage any concerns that I have about him being a drag on batting average if I wanted to add him for home runs and run production. So I think he's the sort of player, you know, we keep saying maybe one of the last as we're, you know, going into mid-September now, but yeah, maybe one of the last players if you saved up your money to splurge on in Fab this weekend, because I think that power-wise, he could be a really big difference maker.
Yeah, I mean, a typical middle-of-the-order run producer, but one that doesn't have that 230, 240 downside, at least in the long run. Maybe initially the strikeout rate comes in a little high and the average comes in low as a result, but he's a righty with a good approach that can be a really nice add for the Rangers and a nice add for us as fantasy players over these final few weeks. The Rangers also have Sam Huff playing a little bit more in the last couple of days, made back-to-back starts this week in a series against the Astros. And I had sort of forgotten about Huff just because I didn't really have him stashed anywhere a year ago when some people were interested. Pretty good numbers, though, this year at AAA. Only 63 games for Sam Huff, but 21 home runs, a 263, 36, 533 line. Has catcher eligibility. I think there's at least interest here in two catcher formats just because the raw power is good enough to pretty much play right away. I just don't know if the playing time, so long as Jonah Heim is healthy, is really going to exceed more than 3 or 4 starts a week as we look at the rest of the schedule.
Yeah, that would be my expectation, is probably about 3 starts a week, maybe even not quite that much. So a lot of strikeouts too in the minors and in his brief time in the majors. So I think, yeah, number two catcher, and I don't really have high expectations. It's not like with some of the other catchers that have been called up or you know, players we've talked about in you know, recent months, like Cal Raleigh. It's not like, oh, well, you know, number two, maybe high end, maybe works his way into that number one discussion. I think he's more a guy you plug in if you've just really struggled to get somebody productive as your number two catcher.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to sum it up as it pertains to Sam Huff. Probably a little more appeal if you're playing in a keeper or a dynasty league and he's available and you've got a chance to hold on to him as a very inexpensive keeper for 2023. But the playing time would have to open up with either a trade or some work at another position just to get him on the field on a more regular basis because things are a bit crowded in Texas. Yoan Moncada, I think, is worth a mention here just for some shallow leagues especially. I know there's some 12-team leagues I play in where he is available. He is back from the IL, had a monster game against the A's on Thursday. He's going to play a ton. This has been a miserable season for Moncada. Really has been struggling for the better part of what feels like three seasons now. And he's talked a lot about how having COVID a couple years ago really impacted him. Just didn't physically feel right for a long time after first contracting the virus. You look at the swing and miss in his profile, the walk rate's down a little bit this season, but some of the underlying numbers are still solid. The barrel rate's at 8.7%. The average at 211 right now just seems remarkably low for a guy that has shown the ability to make a lot of hard contact in the past. Where do you land on Moncada? It's just weird to see a player fall off this quickly in his age 27 season. Do you think he can make a positive impact in the final month of the season?
I think he definitely could. I mean, he just recently had a two-homer game. There's only five games on the White Sox schedule this week, but they're all pretty good pitcher matchups for them. So I actually wouldn't think it's a bad idea at all to pick Moncada up. Probably not in 12-teamers, but you know, like 14-team leagues, I think it's an interesting play. And I do think he could rebound. And you mentioned the batting average. That's the really, really weird thing about the profile, because the 1 year he had with the good home run production definitely now looks like the outlier. But this is somebody who's put up, like you said, put up good averages, good BABIPs that don't really look that fluky. It does seem like he should bring that batting average up over the last few weeks here. So if that's an area that you need help in, I think Moncada is a decent ad.
In a situation where you're looking at Moncada versus Young, I'm just curious who you'd prioritize first. The guy that has at one point at least shown the ability to be an above average contributor against big league pitching, or the younger player that seems to have more ceiling at this point in their respective careers?
I think, yeah, this question kind of reveals a bias that I think a lot of us have. I would prefer Young, and I could see there being a place for Young on my 12-team, my teams in 12-team leagues because of that power upside. Whereas Moncada, I do view him at this point as somebody who might be able to help with batting average, maybe able to score some runs just by virtue of hitting high up in the White Sox lineup. But my expectations are a lot lower from him. But the bias is, you know, projecting our best dreams and hopes on the player we haven't seen play yet versus a more pessimistic outlook from somebody who we've seen for several years now.
One more name that really fits into this conversation, if we're talking about filling a corner infield spot, is Tristan Casas. He's getting an opportunity right now for the Red Sox. Of course, Bobby Dalbec has been sent down. This is a player that, like Josh Young, probably would have come up a little earlier this season if injuries hadn't cost him some time at AAA. The results, I think, were very good. I mean, Tristan Casas, just a 22-year-old, so a bit young for that level. 27% better than a league average hitter, keeping the strikeouts in check at 21.5%, drawing plenty of walks, and getting to that power pretty often, kind of a 20 to 25 home run sort of pace if you kind of take those numbers and stretch them out over a full 162-game season. This is similar to the Young situation for me, Al, because I think the Red Sox are going to give Casas every opportunity to show that he's ready to take over this job into the start of next season.
Yeah, that seems to be, first of all, there's really nobody blocking him. Like you said, Dalbec sent down. First base has been a really tough position for the Red Sox all season long. And so not only is there nobody really in the way, but he started several games in a row already. So you've got a pretty good sign there that playing time's not going to be a problem for Casas. The issue is just where is he going to contribute? And he only hit 11 home runs at Worcester because he missed a couple of months with the ankle sprain. So, you know, who knows what he would have done. Maybe he would have gotten to that 20 to 25 range if he had played those couple extra months. But I'm a little bit skeptical of the power numbers that he's going to put up. But yeah, the strikeout to walk ratios, as you mentioned, have been really consistently good every step along the way throughout the minors. So even though in the first few games, in an extremely small sample, we're not seeing those kinds of rates yet, I could see Costas as somebody who gets on base, hits for a decent average, can help a bit with run production. But my questions about how much power he's going to have make me pretty lukewarm about him in 12 teamers. Maybe just a dollar bid to throw in there. But my interest would be much stronger in 14, 15 team leagues.
Yeah, I think he's a half notch below some of the very best corner players we've seen brought up earlier this season. If you were comparing him to our interest in Vinny Pasquantino back when Vinny P first got the call, it's a notch below that. 12 team leagues, I think, are at least in play, but I would agree with you, Al. I don't think I'm spending a lot in a league like that. I think it's more for 14, 15 team leagues, anything deeper where I'd be more interested in redraft scenarios. So for me, if I'm looking at all of those corners, it is Young ahead of Moncada, but it's also Costas ahead of Moncada too, for me, to be completely honest. I think I'm willing to take the chance on the ceiling in both cases over the guy that has gone through this prolonged stretch of schedule of struggles, even though the schedule over the weekend could be a good one for him to start putting the pieces back together with that long series against the A's. One more mention for Michael Tolia, who's been playing every day for the Rockies going back to August 31st. There is a lot more swing and miss in his profile, though, than there is in the other corner bats that we're talking about. So just keep that in mind, that there's probably a lower floor that comes with him from the batting average category in particular. So other infielders of note, Tyler Freeman playing a lot for the Guardians. Al, I'm just not sure we're going to get more than a batting average and maybe a decent run total from him in the short term. I think the things we always look for the most, the homers and steals, might be categories that we have to wait a while to get any sort of contributions in.
Yeah, and I guess if you want to look at the bright side of it, that because the things that Tyler Freeman has done well are things that are a little bit less glamorous and I think typically get bid not quite as aggressively on, that if you have that categorical need, which is that phrase that the phrase that pays in this last month of the season, you may not have to bid as much in order to get Freeman to help you with those things. But I also do worry a bit about playing time for Freeman. I don't know how much he's going to be starting against right-handed pitchers, but you know, in deeper leagues, 15 teams and deeper, if you do need somebody to help you with batting average, Freeman's definitely worth at least a small bid.
Yeah, more of a contingent option for me than someone I'm really seeking out, but is playing a bit for the Guardians at this point. For some more shallow leagues, you're looking for some help at second base. I did get a question earlier this week about Eduardo Escobar. I think it makes sense. I think his profile, the underlying numbers look pretty solid from a power perspective. That barrel rate is still where it needs to be for him to be kind of a 20 home run hitter. I do think because he doesn't really steal bases and because there is a little bit of swing and miss in that profile, it's probably a 20 home run power profile that comes with a little more batting average risk than you would like, but the lineup is good, so I think those counting stats should be solid. And I do think Escobar is worth considering if you're looking for help up the middle or even on the corner, since he's got eligibility at both spots in most leagues.
Yeah, if he's out there in the shallow league, Escobar is a must add. I went as far in this week's waiver column as saying that Escobar is somebody to at least consider is a 12-team streamer because of the Mets schedule. They have a great schedule this week. Three games against the Cubs, four against the Pirates. In that Cubs series, they're not going to face Marcus Stroman. They're not going to face Drew Smyly. It's really good matchups up and down the schedule this week for the Mets. So any Mets that are available, Escobar, I think primary among them, because he's really locked in lately. And it's kind of funny because two, three weeks ago, we were talking about Escobar's basically his fantasy relevance being non-existent because Brett Beatty had been called up. Escobar himself had been put on the IL, but meanwhile, Beatty had season-ending surgery. And Escobar had a minimum stay on the IL and was very much needed with Beatty out. And ever since he's come back, he's hit really well. So, yeah, I think Escobar, at least for the week, is somebody you can consider in 12-teamers. And I would add Marcana to that, too, because he's hit pretty well lately. I'm a little skeptical of the power that's been there for Canna lately, just because that's generally not been the better part of his profile. But he's not been striking out at all lately, so should hit for average, should have a really good week with that schedule.
And if you're looking for other options to consider, at least as fallback options, maybe in the third base position, check eligibility on this because it might fluctuate by site. Romy Gonzalez for the White Sox actually playing quite a bit recently. He's been getting regular run at second base, enough to the point where I think he would actually qualify in season there in most leagues. So it might be second base plus third or second base plus the outfield, depending on the league site that you're playing on. I just think he's interesting because the power and speed he showed in the minors last year, it's surprising. This is not a top prospect. This is a guy that's a little bit old for the level. So I think that's part of why people aren't as excited. Last season at AA as a 24-year-old, Romy Gonzalez popped 20 homers and stole 21 bases. He did that with a 28% K rate, which is a lot of swing and miss for a 24-year-old at AA. But when a guy like this finds playing time, at the very least in mono leagues, I think Gonzalez is worth the pickup.
Yeah, no, I think that, yeah, definitely is another player that I've overlooked because of age. Now, he has not stolen a base yet in his first 15 games this year up with the White Sox. But yeah, I guess that's something that may come about. And yeah, you know, otherwise producing really well and getting the playing time. So that's a great call.
It didn't do much during a prolonged stint at AAA this season either. So just an odd profile, but playing because they need him to right now on the south side of Chicago.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
You mentioned Corey Dickerson last week as we move over to the outfield. I think if you're in a shallow league and he's still available, I'm just bumping his name again so he's not forgotten about. They did add another outfielder to the mix recently, Alec Burleson, who I think has come up on a few of our Prospect Tuesday episodes over the course of the year. So he's getting his first exposure to the big leagues right now. I don't really know if he's more than a bench bat in the immediate future, but he put up great numbers this year at AAA Memphis, a 331, 372, 532 line, 20 homers and 470 plate appearances, chipped in 4 stolen bases as well. Did that with a low strikeout rate, a 14.3% K rate. Just the kind of player that I'm interested in seeing more from, more for the future evaluation. Yeah, I don't know if there's a whole lot of immediate value here outside of NL-only leagues as one of your absolute last bats, but Burleson, you know, could be included in a trade this offseason, could find his way in a competition maybe for a fourth outfielder bench role next season, could be sort of a Dickerson replacement depending on how things unfold there. So just an interesting name that's finally getting a chance at the big league level.
And for what it's worth, has started the last two games for the Cardinals. So this is somebody we talked about repeatedly. It was almost like a Vinny Pasquantino situation where you and I would say, he just keeps putting up good numbers. When is he coming up? But a much less crowded situation for Pasquantino with the Royals than with Burleson. He's really had to wait his turn. But particularly with the injury to Dylan Carlson, he's got his opportunity now. So it might be a little bit of a stretch to say he's worth picking up 15 teamers. I'll probably have him in as a contingent bid in some of those leagues this weekend. But definitely worth watching both for the short and for the long term, because if he does play, he could actually help you out the last couple of weeks. And if nothing else, it is really interesting to watch to see what his role might be for next year, because he's had a really nice season.
Let's take a look at a few more players that probably fit better in mono leagues. Maybe there's a handful of guys here that you could squeeze onto a roster in a deep mixed league. I'm curious what you think of TJ Friedl getting a chance right now for the Reds. Are you buying him as someone that can provide some late season value with this opportunity in a hitter-friendly environment?
Well, he's profiled a bit like Mark Canha recently, where I talked about the fact that Canha over the last few weeks has been giving both batting average and power. Same for Friedl. Friedl has very little actual raw power, but he does have that great home park for hitting home runs, and he definitely makes the most of it, a high fly ball rate, a high pull rate. So it might not be a total fluke that Friedl's been on a bit of a power binge. And I do like, for the most part, I like the Reds' schedule this week. They start off with four home games, even better, against the Pirates. So good matchups. He's got the home venue there. That might make up for the fact that then the Reds go to St. Louis to play the Cardinals. But, even there, you figure he's probably going to get six starts out of an 8-game schedule this week. Friedl's been leading off against righties. So probably not quite ready for 12-teamers yet, but he's out there in 15-teamers. I think he's a great ad this week.
Yeah, schedule dependent, I do think, because they've given him pretty consistent days out of the starting lineup when they face a left-handed starter, but his place in that order has become a more prominent one. You mentioned opportunities to lead off. It doesn't seem like he falls much lower than fifth in the order for the Reds right now when he gets chances to play, so that bodes pretty well. Love the schedule, at least starting with a home series this week for TJ Friedl. Esteban Florial is getting some opportunities for the Yankees right now in center field. Injuries continue to pile up in the Bronx, and Florial was putting together a really nice season in the minors. We talked about him a couple months ago as a possible source of stolen bases if he got an opportunity. I think we were looking at him more as someone that could possibly get traded at the trade deadline if the Yankees were bolstering that big league roster. Maybe there would be another club that wanted to make a move for Florial and let him play every day. So that 15-homer, 34-steal season over 95 games at AAA, it's really nice. The only thing that really stands out as a big red flag is a 30% K rate at AAA, and that held up last season as well. The results are 10 times better this season from Florial than they were a year ago, but that underlying swing and miss hasn't gone away, even with this step forward. So I have a lot of doubts about his chances of quickly making adjustments against top-level pitching.
Yeah, he's probably not going to have much time to do that. But he has stolen a couple of bases already for the Yankees. So I think we're talking about a deep league pickup with a categorical need for stolen bases. You might not have enough of a run to really help you there, but probably won't have to bid much to get him. And I think it's a worthwhile risk, at least for this week. See how it plays out.
Obligatory Nando guy mentioned here, Lewis Brinson leading off against lefties for the Giants. Probably limited to NL-only leagues for now, as, again, one of your last outfielders, one of your last players on the roster. Also, probably a useful daily fantasy tournament dart if you're just looking to round out a lineup and the price is near the min salary price. You know, get him in the right matchup, maybe it works out. The thing you got to keep in mind is the Giants mix and match a ton. They pinch hit a lot in late innings, but nice to see Brinson getting that opportunity for the Giants, even though it appears to be mostly working against left-handed starters, so playing time could be a little thin. David Villar, who we talked about a couple months ago, the first time the Giants brought him up, is back in the fold. He's made 7 consecutive starts entering play on Friday, splitting that time between the 2 corner infield spots. You know, Brandon Belt, of course, down with an injury right now, so that's opened up a lot of playing time for the Giants.
It has, which, you know, that's really saying something. Like you said, so much mixing and matching. The only players really with any kind of consistency getting regular playing time, not the ones you would have guessed, Wilmer Flores and Tiago Estrada, but at least of late, VR has joined them as somebody who's playing every day. Just a ton of power potential that we saw in AAA. I'm not really expecting him to, you know, come close to that. And I'm also not necessarily expecting that VR is going to continue to play every day, because we've seen this with the Giants. They'll give somebody some run for a while and then they'll play a hot hand, or there'll be, you know, matchups that will dictate that, you know, a player won't play as much. So I like him for 15 teamers, but beyond that, I just feel like there's a little too much risk.
Yeah, it's sort of a counting stats, playing time, volume play. Some of the early indicators from StatCast are a little underwhelming. David Villar in the 10th percentile in max exit velocity. I tried to make that one word so far, and then 30th percentile in sprint speed. So yeah, that power we saw at AAA, probably not coming all the way through at the big league level. Alan Trejo getting more playing time for the Rockies. I still see him as more of a monoleague player than someone you'd want to throw in, even in a 15-team mixed league. I guess you could stream him at home. Maybe that's the one exception. If the Rockies have a home schedule for a series or two in a week, go ahead, throw him out there. He's the starter, so long as Jose Iglesias is on the IL. Ledmys Diaz has been a really nice glue guy for the Astros this season. Could be back from the IL on Monday. And as you pointed out, this is a great schedule. 3 at Detroit and 4 against Oakland during the upcoming week.
Yeah, great schedule for Astros hitters and pitchers this week. And the thing is with the Astros, whenever they have weeks like this, it's frustrating because there might be 2 or 3 teams in a given week that have schedules that really stand out. But when it happens to be the Astros, it's, you know, everybody's already rostered. That's really a fantasy impact player. So this is a chance where Ledmys Diaz, who's on the IL, may be going a little bit under the radar in a lot of leagues. And maybe for good reason, because whereas he was getting some regular play earlier before he went on the IL, right now it's not really clear where that playing time would come from. But since he does play almost everywhere, you could see him DHing a couple times a week, maybe playing left field a couple of times a week, giving Jeremy Pena a spell once or twice a week. And suddenly you've got something close to full-time playing time. And it would be nice if he did that right away because, yeah, 3 games in Detroit, 4 home games against the Athletics, that's going to be a lot of great matchups.
Yeah, it really is. A couple other names that I thought were intriguing this weekend. Nate Eaton, who had 23 steals in 91 games at 2 minor league levels this season, is 5-for-5 in 23 games. Really a part-time player for the Royals, so I would look at him as an AL-only league source of speed and not necessarily someone you're picking up in mixed leagues, but worth considering if you play in a 10, 12-team AL-only league where the waiver wire is often picked very thin. And the last guy is Mike Ford, last hitter, that is. He's playing a ton. He's hitting .244, .326, .463 over the last 3 weeks with an everyday role on this Angels team. They're a mess. I mean, I'm not going to pretend like they're not. I'm just curious if you want Mike Ford as maybe even a contingency option for some of those deeper mixed leagues. If you're chasing those more enticing corners and you get outbid, is Ford at least a fallback option if you're trying to just fill in for someone with a good bit of playing time?
Oh, I think so, yeah. The playing time, the power potential, which is finally being realized a little bit. I like the way that you frame the appeal there, because not somebody I would make more than a nominal bid on, but as a fallback option, especially if you do have a gap to fill, Ford could really be a pleasant surprise.
Yeah, playing a lot. I think he started all but 1 game since Jared Walsh got hurt, so that goes all the way back to August 25th, so keep that in mind. Usually hitting somewhere between 4th and 6th in this Angel lineup. Let's move on to some pitching. We had a few of these names on the rundown last week. Hunter Brown looks really good. We were kind of wondering if the role was going to be, you know, spot starter to help rest other members of the rotation, or long reliever that would piggyback. They actually used him for a start. It looks like that's going to happen with a 6-man rotation temporarily in Houston. It makes sense just to take some mileage off younger starters and a guy like Christian Javier, who has worked a lot out of the bullpen and isn't necessarily set up to go deep into October without some built-in rest. The debut from Brown was 6 scoreless innings, 5 Ks, 1 walk, just 3 hits against the Rangers. I'm just curious, in what types of leagues are you willing to add Hunter Brown in right now?
I'm willing to add him in 12-teamers. And part of the reason for that is that he might have a really great two-step. Now, we just talked about Ledmys Diaz a little while ago in the great hitter matchups. Those are also great pitcher matchups for the Astros at Detroit, at home against the Athletics. And there is some chance that Brown makes starts against both of those teams this week. Now, what could preclude that is Justin Verlander. If he does come off the IL before the end of next week, then I would be pretty surprised if Brown makes that second start. But you also made the point that Christian Javier, maybe he goes back to the bullpen. So there's a chance at a great two-step for Hunter Brown. And maybe the worst case scenario is that he makes one start against Detroit. And if he aced the Rangers as well as he did, I'd trust him to make a good start against the Tigers.
Yeah, I think there's two more things that I think are worth mentioning with Brown. I mean, there were concerns about his walk rate coming in to the big leagues, and I think those are legit, and those should persist even into next season. Only one walk in the debut. It's an encouraging sign. It's one start, so you can't read too much into it, but it's encouraging nonetheless. And then if you look at the Enoceris pitching model from his first start, Hunter Brown had average location, which is great because a lot of times guys come up with electric stuff and well below average location. And then we have a little more of the by the model, is this guy just a reliever kind of stuck in a starter's role right now on a good team? Especially when you see that profile, it becomes a lot more difficult to buy into it. But these are all very good early signs for Hunter Brown and great opportunities. If it turns into a two-step like you suggested, that's huge. But even just one of those matchups makes him stream worthy. I'd even probably think about him in a 10-team league if I'm just looking for innings here at the end of the season, because the win probability in those matchups is so high, and every league I play in right now has wins just completely clustered together. Let's talk about Cody Morris for a moment. I think he came up at the end of the pod last week because that was right when we found out that Zach Plesac broke his hand punching the mound and Aaron Civale had a forearm injury pop up, and Morris is still in the process of stretching out, but what we're seeing is a step toward maybe being able to go five innings in the not-so-distant future. I imagine that because Brown is fully stretched out and Morris isn't, it's easy to prioritize Brown first, but are you starting to think about Cody Morris as an option in more leagues given how much more he pitched in that second outing compared to his first one?
Definitely, yeah. That has definitely made me much more interested in Morris for this coming week. Not on the same level. I wouldn't trust him in a 12-team league, even though Morris, too, I think maybe has an even better chance to make two starts just because of all the injuries that the Guardians have. I don't see anybody pushing him out of the rotation. So as of right now, Morris lines up to start against the Angels on Monday. Great matchup. Great way to start the week. Almost certainly lines him up to start at home against the Twins next weekend. That one worries me a little bit. So I think just the concerns about exactly how many innings is he going to pitch in these starts, how well will Morris perform against the Twins, that for me takes him out of that 12-teamer conversation. But unless maybe you have room to stash him and kind of play wait and see with this week for Morris, but definitely more intriguing with the jump in innings.
Yeah, I think your roster context is pretty important if you're trying to decide on Cody Morris, if you can afford to stash a pitcher that's not necessarily in your lineup, or if you got a good handle on wins already and it doesn't really matter if he only goes four and change. In those instances, I'd be pretty comfortable picking him up even in a 12-team league, because I do think in the final 2 to 3 weeks of the season, he'll be going five plus by then. Through 61 pitches in that second outing against the Royals after throwing 54 pitches in his big league debut against the Mariners back on September 2nd. So a really intriguing arm who seems to have a wide open path to a larger role for the Guardians over the remaining weeks of this season.
If you're as obsessed with basketball as I am, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Hey guys, this is JJ Redick. Twice a week, I'm cooking up something special for basketball junkies on my podcast, The Old Man and the Three. I bring on guests in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, like Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, or Paolo Banchero on his shooting workouts with Kevin Durant, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron when they were teammates in Miami. But it's not just about the player interviews. Every Monday, I break down the top three things happening around the NBA without the outlandish takes. Often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler, we dive deep into topics like rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is meme mugging now a tech? The Old Man and the Three is the only companion podcast you'll need during the playoffs this year. Be sure to listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic.
See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Bailey Falter, a regular on this show, it seems like in the second half of seasons is when Bailey Falter starts to show up. It looks like he could have a pretty good matchup to start the week going on the road to face Miami. Unfortunately, the second start comes on the road against Atlanta. We talk about this pretty much every week. Do you trust the quality of the first matchup enough to take on the risk of the second matchup in this case with Bailey Falter?
I am absolutely avoiding Falter in a weekly lineup scenario with those matchups. And it's tough, right? Because it would be great to have him for that start against the Marlins in Miami, no less. But I've had this blow up on me too many times recently, DVR, that I know it's not the smart move unless you just need to go for bulk innings, go for strikeouts, go for the wins. In which case, if you don't have to worry about ratios, there's not much risk in starting Falter in a weekly lineup league. But if those things matter to you at all at this stage, I just think that that's way too much risk to start Falter. And there's actually a one start option we're going to talk about momentarily who I think would be a much better choice if you need to worry about ratios.
I'm going to take the chance on Falter because I think the recent form has been good enough where I'm beginning to trust him for some shallow leagues. But it is worth pointing out Atlanta against lefties has a 124 WRC plus as a team. That's third best in the league. So the only reason I'm willing to take on that risk is because the Marlins have been the worst team in the league against lefties this season by far, a 63 WRC plus. So you're sort of getting a plus plus great matchup the first time and getting at least a plus negative. That's a terrible way to describe it, but the good matchup is even greater on the good side than the bad matchup is skewed to the tough side. So I think it works out for Falter. If you're protecting ratios, it might not be the move for you, but I do think he's worth considering. The recent form, though, has been excellent. Been getting deep into his starts pretty consistently, deep enough to at least have a shot at wins. Going back to July 24th, so we're talking about six starts for Falter because he missed some time from the end of July to the late part of August. 34 and two-thirds innings, a 3.38 ERA, 0.98 whip, 8 Ks per 9, only 1.3 walks per 9. He's got a home run issue, and the ballpark is not going to help him when he's got home starts. Fortunately, he gets Miami on the road. That's a good first step as well. So I'm in on Bailey Falter, at least for this week. You've got Jose Suarez here as someone who's pitched really well recently, and I'm curious, are you trusting him against a Guardians team that really doesn't strike out that much?
Well, and that's a good thing to point out. The short answer is yes, I do trust Suarez, and I trust, and I said this explicitly in the waiver column, I actually trust him more than Falter this week because that's a good point to raise about the strikeouts. If that is your categorical need, then Falter is clearly your superior choice with two starts. But overall, I just think that the Guardians are a really good matchup. They've hit for less power than any other team in the majors in terms of isolated power over the last 30 days. They're one of the worst teams in terms of WOBA over the last 30 days. They're just a good matchup right now, unless you need strikeouts. So, and then Suarez, to his credit, a 1.76 ERA and a 0.90 whip over his last 41 innings. Michael Salfino wrote about Suarez in his most recent column on The Athletic and talked about how Suarez has been really good even going further back than those last 41 innings. Basically, you go back to the beginning of July, his expected stats are really outstanding. So not the sort of pitcher with one start that you can necessarily count on a lot of strikeouts for, even if he's facing a team that's not the Guardians. But I like him a lot this week. I'll be looking for him in my 12-teamers.
Let's get to a few younger starters who've come up recently. Ryan Nelson, who pitched really well in his debut earlier this week against the Padres, has a tough schedule. Two home starts, potentially. First one against the Dodgers, second one against the Padres. If you can't split them, I'd be very careful with Ryan Nelson. He would be use only if ratios are damaged and I'm in the chase counting stats mode. I like what we saw overall. I mentioned that earlier this week. I believe in the talent here, especially if you're in a league where you could pick him up and keep him. I did that overnight in our keeper league. I think there's actually a pretty bright future here. The main thing I've been honing in on too with Ryan Nelson is Amarillo and Reno. The AA and AAA affiliates for Arizona are brutally difficult places to pitch. I think it's easy to overlook pitchers at those particular affiliates because the ratios are going to run pretty high. So you have to look a lot more at the arsenal and what he was doing. A little fastball heavy in his debut, but that tends to be the case for guys debuting. They seem to throw a pitch they can command consistently a little more often than usual. So I do want to see if he works those secondaries in at higher rates as he starts to see lineups potentially a second or third time, maybe down the stretch, and he'll get the Padres for the second time at the end of next week. So I'm in on Nelson in very certain circumstances, but I do think the schedule takes a little bit away from the short-term appeal.
Oh, for sure. And to get back to the home run issue, I think it is really good to look at that ballpark context for Nelson or for any Diamondbacks pitcher that's coming up. But he also has been very distinctly a fly ball pitcher. And so that just kind of adds to the risk of facing these two lineups. But he made his major league debut against the Padres and was outstanding. And one stat in the line for him that really stood out to me was 20 called strikes out of 87 pitches. That is an extremely good ratio. And I have to wonder if some of that is just the nature of facing a Padres team that is very selective. And you get kind of the same thing with the Dodgers, but I just think that there's a reward risk calculation here that's just too heavy at risk. Maybe those are matchups that benefit Nelson in some way, but especially with the fly ball tendencies that he has, it's way too much risk for me.
Yeah, I think you got to be careful in the short term, even though there's a really interesting pitcher developing here in Arizona. Hayden Wisniewski is up for the Cubs. First appearance, came out of the bullpen, went 5 innings, struck out 8. Fantastic relief outing. Justin Steele's back on the IL, so there's a very good chance that Wisniewski, who's fully stretched out, will actually start during the upcoming week. At the Mets might be the matchup, though, and you know, from a park factors consideration, that's not a bad spot to be, but in terms of what the Mets offense actually does, it's a pretty difficult start to make for your second big league appearance, if that's in fact how things play out. What are you doing with Hayden Wisniewski where available?
Where available is a lot of places, but I'm really not pursuing him in mixed leagues. Maybe if I were in I'm in one very deep mixed league. Actually, yeah, I would feel good about starting Wisniewski in that league. So, yeah, be very deep mixed leagues, mono leagues. Otherwise, I'd rather just put him on the watch list.
There is a Cub that you put on the rundown, Wade Miley. I think you put Wade Miley on the rundown much more often than I do. So what do you like about Wade Miley this week?
I like the fact that he's coming off of a start that he came off of the IL. He actually, Wisniewski, piggybacked with Miley. So they both pitched in that game. They both pitched really well. The surface stats for Miley were not as good as Wisniewski's, but the underlying stats looked really good. So I'm very encouraged by that first start off of the IL for Miley. And the main thing I really like about him this week is that he lines up to start against the Rockies at Wrigley Field. And any pitcher, I won't say that there's, no floor, no bar that you have to cross to be startable with that matchup. But Miley, wherever that line is, Miley is definitely across it.
Yeah, I think he's viable, especially in like a 15-team league. I don't know if I want to use him in leagues much more shallow than that, but you never know. Depending on how thin the wire is, he may be a consideration. There are a few other names among starters that, at least if you're in a 12-team league, might still be out there for this week. J.P. Sears has been mentioned probably on 3 or 4 of these waiver episodes the last few weeks, so we don't need to go into great detail about what we think of him as a pitcher, but at Texas, I'm not really worried about that from a matchup perspective, so I'd be happy to stream him even in a 12 if I was desperate for pitching this week, and I believe Sears is going to line up for a 2-start week next week. Home for both of those, home against Seattle, home against the Mets, tough opponents, but very favorable ballpark. So you might actually find 2 weeks for the value from J.P. Sears in the leagues where he is still available. The other interesting name I thought was Drew Smyly. I mean, if we're looking at Wade Miley home against the Rockies, we're probably looking at Drew Smyly home against the Rockies. Weird that they rhyme. I don't know why that's the case, but that's the other starter that I think is pretty easy to get in a lot of your shallow mixed leagues that could give you 5+ in a pretty safe spot. As long as the wind doesn't swirl and start blowing out at Wrigley for those matchups, those are at least deep league streaming considerations for us as we look ahead to the upcoming week. Let's shift the focus over to bullpens, where Jose Leclerc appears to be the guy in Texas now. This Rangers team has been kind of frustrating in recent weeks, moving the save opportunities around. I know part of that's, you know, the health and the absence of Joe Barlow, who I believe lost the job before going on the IL, but still has pitched pretty well this year. Leclerc used to be the guy before all the injuries happened and was the preferred choice of the former manager, Chris Woodward. So what are you doing with Jose Leclerc in leagues where he's out there, where you're still looking for saves?
I mean, I'm not completely confident that he is the guy, capital T, capital H, capital E, in that bullpen, but he's really, after being a little rocky after first rejoining the team in midseason, he's been pretty good the last few weeks. So in leagues where I need saves and they're hard to find, Leclerc is probably my key target this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, Jimmy Herget's still out there in some more shallow formats. And if I'm looking at Herget versus Leclerc, maybe a slight edge to Herget because I think there's less sharing happening in the Angels bullpen. I think the team quality is similar, even though it feels like the Rangers might have a little more late season momentum by comparison. Any other bullpen situations you've been monitoring over the course of this week in hopes of finding some September saves?
That's pretty much it. Cause yeah, we've talked about some of the other situations recently, like the Cubs and the Astros when Presley was out, but I think you've mentioned the two guys in Herget and Leclerc who would definitely be at the top of my list, maybe the whole list for saves this week.
It's been that way off and on all season where we're just not finding a lot of new sources for saves. Maybe that'll change, though, over the course of the weekend, of course, as we suggest either in passing or explicitly each and every week. Keep an eye on things between now and when Fab runs on Sunday night. You never know what kind of value might pop up between now and then. Hopefully this is at least a good starting point as you think about your pickups for this weekend. Of course, many people in your league might be losing focus on fantasy baseball with the fantasy football season now underway. If you'd like to stick with it for the rest of the season, you don't have a subscription to The Athletic, you can get one for $1 a month for the first 6 months at theathletic.com/fantasybaseballpodcast. That gets you Al's waiver column every week, every other fantasy baseball story we have, or if you're, you know, multi-sport fantasy playing right now, we've got all the fantasy football content you could possibly need, all for one low price. You can find Al on Twitter at AlMelkierBB. You can find me at Derek Van Riper. That's going to do it for this episode of the Athletic Fantasy Baseball Podcast. We are back with you on Tuesday.